Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Earl Morgan Hour. Brace yourself.
Right? Good evening, ladies and gentlemen out there in GoPro land.
Good evening.
7 p.m. on a Wednesday, and this, as you know, is your Morgan Hour, and I have very good news for you tonight. My co-host, Senior Bland, is back.
This episode is brought to you in
Thank you.
Having survived a bout with the flu that left me flying solo here, which is hard to get used to once you've had somebody as dynamic as my co-host, but she's back, and we are going to be the dynamic duo once again.
We are.
Tonight, let me tell you who we have on our show. We have Professor Donald Malone, who teaches urban studies at sociology and urban studies at St. Peter's University in Jersey City. I know you're probably thinking we're an arm of this university by now, because 2 weeks ago we had a group of youngsters on, students from St. Peter's, who are interns in the after-school program, 21st century after-school program, who were just great kids, and they were just wonderful. I'm going to have them back. I don't know how I'm going to work it out, but I'm going to have them back. And this week we have Donald Malone, who's a professor at St. Peter's, who I met many years ago when he wasn't that many years ago, was it? Two or three.
Yeah.
He invited me to speak to some of his students about Jersey City and about what's going on here. And he's asked me on several other occasions to come and be involved in forums and things he did, speak to the senior students he teaches a class with. And I thought it was only right that I invite him here so that we can talk about these urban issues. And they become very relevant. They're never irrelevant, but they become much more relevant now that we've had Ferguson and Tamir Rice and we've had those shootings. And we just had the President of the United States do something last night that was very interesting, giving a State of the Union speech where he suggested that we do 2 years of free community college.
Yes.
You know, at one time they were free. We had one here that was free. You know, there was a community college at Lincoln High School.
Really?
Yes, when I first went to Lincoln High School, when I was a student there, I guess 1950. Blah, blah, blah. we had community college there, and the same old budget stuff. Well, you know, budgetary considerations, and they just cut it out. So we lost that for a long, long time. Then all of a sudden, community college came back in vogue. Now we have a real. I mean, it was in the Lincoln High School school. They now have built us a community college, and, you know, it's thriving, doing pretty well. And I thought that was an excellent idea, but I don't think that the loyal opposition sees it that way. I think they think that this is, well, as they put it, well, somebody has to pay for it. Yes, well. So I wanted to talk to you about how your students are coping with these changes and what does it do in an urban studies class. What kinds of issues does it raise? What kinds of things do you guys talk about? And how do the students involve themselves and interact in the city, considering that if they're in a sociology and urban studies class, they must be, you know, contemplating a career in that. So I'm wondering how it's impacting you. Before we get to that, though, I want to talk about something else.
And I just want to ask, first I want to say, let's remember, this weekend was the weekend that we celebrate Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday, and I just want us to be really vigilant in how important that is. not just to African Americans, but hopefully to all wise Americans. Because if it was not for the civil rights era, we would not sit here in this studio.
Dr. Malone, have you seen the movie Selma yet?
Not yet, but I've heard a lot.
I have.
I saw the movie last week.
Me too.
And I consider myself, though I'm 71 now, still a civil rights baby. I mean, my generation came up in that. We not only have to see the movie, we lived it. And I went to see it. Interesting. You'd be interested in this. With 200 Jersey City students from 40 schools that St. Peter's program paid for. And we went
good
in
for them.
Yeah. And I went in with them. They asked popcorn for them and something to drink. It was nice. And I'm wondering, how is this going to work? Because, you know, you got 400 active youngsters and, you know, are they going to get frisky? Are we going to be able to watch this movie? Are we going to be able to, you know, have people running around and on the phones and all? After the first scene, which was a reenactment, almost a startling reenactment.
Startling.
The church bombing of the youngsters.
Yes.
You knew it was now. If you're us, and Tina, you grew up
in the South.
Mississippi and New Orleans, so I know you know about this stuff.
I do.
And I know about it because the day it happened, it was worldwide news. It wasn't American news. It was everywhere in on the globe.
The world changed. That's right.
When the director, who did one heck of a job,
phenomenal woman,
the explosion happened, boom, and we were all sitting there, and it just startled everybody. I mean, all the kids shrieked. I jumped. I knew this was going to happen.
And the movie began. But that was how it began.
That's how it started. And
does that set a tone?
It not only set a tone, the studio, the theater was just hushed like a church. With rare exception, unless somebody had to go up and use the facilities, it was quiet in there. The kids paid attention, but for the most part. I think they were stunned at some of the things they saw. You lived through it, and I lived through it. Because the other thing she did when they got to the Edmund Pettus Bridge, probably the most famous thing that's ever come out of that, she reenacted that whole thing with the state troopers and Sheriff Clark's posse running these people down. It was brutal and stark, and the kids just...
And no matter what is told to you today, it will not be enough, because she did such a phenomenal job on this particular movie that the fear was tangible.
Yeah. And I'm wondering, considering now that the kids today, you know, because you're an urban studies professor, one of the things we don't do well in America, to me, this is my opinion, is we don't do history well.
Correct.
Because people come to America to forget their history and rewrite themselves and remake themselves. And what happened, I've often used to hear this a lot. Oh, well, that's all in the past. And it's like, well, if it's in the past, don't worry about it. We can't, you know, that's over. Without understanding that you have to know where you've been to get to where you want to go. And you've got students now who are grappling with all of this, who have not lived through Selma and its aftermath. How are they absorbing all of this change?
Can I point one thing out? The movie that you were talking about, I went to see on Monday, and we had to go to a different theater because the original theater we went to was so overcrowded we could not get in.
It was sold out.
Over, literally.
Where was which theater?
The one in Bayonne. We could not attend in Bayonne.
Wow.
And we couldn't attend the next show because it was sold out also.
Wow.
Yes. So we went to Newport, and we received the last 5 tickets. That's how crowded it was. So when you talk about silence, you know, and you were talking about the teenagers, you know, normally when you go to a movie, you're going to have adults walking back and forth. There was standing room only. You could not hear a sound from the beginning shock of the movie and until the end when everyone stood to clap.
It was that good. And I think that it's a slice of, it's still a movie, because I'm not completely in tune with how they saw Johnson. I lived through that, and I didn't see him the way she saw him. But that's, you know, don't let the good or the bad,
right,
be the destroyer of the good.
You know what my problem was? Having lived in Mississippi? But you can't tell an entire story. But because I lived there, the fact that they did not cover the Knight Riders, who would have sorely come back and killed those that were in that march, and they weren't even spoken about. The fact that there were places in the floors of these houses that you climbed down into to hide your men, they didn't touch it. This is how they drug them out and beat them within an inch of their lives or killed them. No one even mentioned that.
Well, you know,
and I knew because I lived during this time.
And it was because you can't get it all in.
You can't.
There was one scene where Malcolm spoke to Coretta Scott King, which is true.
Right.
There was a mention of Medgar Evers. We saw Viola Leozzo on screen. We did not see her shot when she was in the car. We did see Reverend, the pre-Father Reed. We,
right. Oh, don't do it, Earl. Don't do it.
I don't want to ruin
it.
We're
going to let you.
You got to go see it, though. This is part of what it's all about. Now, this took place in the South, and it was the Civil Rights Movement, and it was about the Voting Rights Act. Let's open it up with right now. Do your teach students or you guys all get into the fact that after 50 years ago that happened, 50 years later, we're fighting for voting rights again? How did they, what do they make of that? What do the students, do they ever see any irony there or anything strange? I mean, we're now back to voter ID, which is like a poll tax. What do they think about that?
What is your discussion that you're having,
right,
about that?
But I think in those particulars, we have, to be honest with you, I haven't got into those particulars, but the broader picture that you draw of history, and that history is not the past, that history weighs on the present, and that you look at communities, and I said this the other day in class, that, you know, when you look at black and white wealth, black and white income in Jersey City, the per capita income of whites is $20,000 at least more than the per capita income of African Americans. The ability of the folks to get out, well, the ghetto, I just said the other day, at the beginning of the intro to Socio, I said, we'll talk about the ghetto. Who created the ghetto and who maintains the ghetto, the hood that they talk, and that the structure of society. So it's still there. I mean, we're living with it today, the consequences. And we talk about Ferguson and the other incidents. And someone said the other day is, we don't have to just reform the police. We need to reform the community and the structure that people need to survive, just like other communities have. And so the policies, as we know, when African Americans came north in the Great Migration, mm-hmm, looking for those opportunities, being pushed into communities without the resources, and then even eventually getting some resources, having them taken away with urban renewal and other kinds of public policies that redlined. That,
like the FHA.
FHA, the government of the United States, you know, in public and private housing. I mean, Levittown, another example of that. So our urban areas
where Bill O'Reilly grew up.
Exactly, which is kind of ironic to have him ranting on about his individual success.
And how when black people were literally not allowed to live there, were absolutely shut out of it. And this was housing built for, let's talk about what Levittown was. It was housing built for returning veterans. It was a great way to begin to give people who had fought in World War II and in Korea a leg up and get going. It's what we need again, because now we got a whole other kind of problem with that, with the veterans of Afghanistan.
Right.
And Bill O'Reilly kept saying that it didn't have anything to do with anything, which, you know, his life didn't have,
right,
black people, because they couldn't live in Levittown, didn't name anything. But,
right.
Well, Levittown's all over the United States, and they couldn't get there. They couldn't.
And what's interesting there is that O'Reilly, myself, and other people, we we had a structure that we benefited from, right? The resources, the access to jobs and unions. For example, I was offered a job at 26 in the Carpenters Union in New York City. I think it was 609. And my cousin was a carpenter just because I was Irish and white. And it was still, today, as you know, it's still like 90% white. That's a structural advantage. It's not you making yourself. It's like President Obama did say that one time. You didn't do it on your own. And so all these, there's differences in those communities. And so with my classes, I try to get them to acknowledge and understand, like, it's not about you as an individual. It's about the opportunities and resources one community gets over another. And I think this is so important because these kids tend to focus on individuals, you know, and individual success and how that matters. But it's where you are, the kind of schooling and opportunities that you get, that you ride that wave. And, you know, there are a lot of these people are average who succeeded, you know, just average folks. And they, and I've said to kids, if you took 100 kids out, you know, from, you know, Princeton and Livingston, put them into some poor communities at 9 years old, you're going to get the same results.
Well, you're getting the same results. Did you, the guy that wrote the bell curve, I can't remember his name, but you probably remember the
Yes.
book.
Murray, Charles Murray. Right?
Charles Murray.
We're on a
hard break. When we come back, I want to talk about another college, NJCU, for a second, but we'll be right back. Stick there, don't go nowhere.
Okay.
Murray wrote.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a great opportunity. If you have an event, product, service, talent, or something important to say, now is your chance. You can have your very own radio show. Whether you're just starting out or a veteran looking for a professional platform to enhance your presentation and following, the GoPro Radio Network is the premier place to cultivate and share new and exciting content. We can help you grow your audience and keep it growing long after your first broadcast. Now you have a voice. Call 212-696-8562 or visit www.goproradio.com and you'll be amazed at how easy and affordable it is to have your very own professional radio show on the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
Attention. Parents of children in Hudson County school districts, including Harrison, West New York, Jersey City, Hoboken, and Union City, you may qualify for free or low-cost child care. The Urban League of Hudson County is providing parents with the opportunity to apply if eligible for before and after school care for children 3 and 4 years old. Find out how. Come to our offices or call at 201-451-8888, extension 187. Urban League of Hudson County.
The GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Earl Morgan Hour. Brace yourself.
All right, we're back with Dr. Donald Malone here in GoPro Radio on the Earl Morgan Hour, and with my, thank goodness, co-host who is back. Boy, am I glad she's back here.
Good evening,
Kenya Bland. Say good evening, Kenya.
Good evening, all.
All right, before we go any further, I want to, my co-host, Kenya, brought in something that we should talk about here for a second. At another university, New Jersey City University, just down the street almost from St. Peter's University. And they had a program here about Dr. Martin Luther King. They had a celebration luncheon for him. And she bought some props I guess we should say, from the how was that? How did it turn out?
It was phenomenal, and it was phenomenal because I want to call a name, and the name is Pamela Means. Pamela Means is the current president of the National Association of Attorneys. She was the keynote speaker. Phenomenal woman. Her speech left us all on our feet. Well, first of all, we were on our feet for most of her speech. And the key points of her speech coincide with the same speech that was given. So it seems like we're all doing the same speech now, because the speech was on the two classes that we have come into in our nation, that we have a middle class and a wealthy class that is rising, that is full of all of us. Oprah Winfrey was number 131 on a Fortune 500 list. 131.
With $1 billion income.
But still only 131, okay? And then we look at our voting and how our votes are being taken away. And everyone, because I went to three different programs in 3 days, and everyone is talking about the fact that we are being moved out of the ranks of voting.
Yes.
Do you realize this? And it is being done deliberately.
Well, the interesting thing about that, and I wrote about it today, was that the Republican Party, which is spearheading this whole idea of voter ID, because they claim there's this high level of voter fraud that no one nowhere, including them, can find. So they had a study that said voting fraud is widespread but undetectable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what kind of an oxymoron is that? It's like dark matter in the universe. We know it's there, but we can't find it. Yeah, I wanted to talk about that because this is we're just 2 days after Martin Luther King's birthday celebration. And one of the interesting things is he was here. He spoke here.
Right.
He spoke at the Metropolitan AME Church on Belmont Avenue. I know that because I was there.
I know three people who were there then.
I was a reporter for the New York City Journal, which was, I believe, a weekly. And it was so crowded you couldn't get in the place. I think they had to put speakers outside.
Was it during the day? And
it was in the evening. And the next week, it was amazing. King walked out on the stage. He looked rather troubled. Something had gone backstage that didn't sound like it went too well. By the look on his face, he seemed to have a frown. But when he hit that stage, it was like a rock star coming out there. The women squealed. The place went crazy. They had choirs that sang. We had some great choirs in those days. And he got up and made a speech. And as usual, I mean, I think King could wake him up in the middle of the night and he'd make a great speech. A week later, he was dead. A week later, I got fired from the New York City Journal. And while I'm arguing with the editor, who I really didn't get along with, the AP wire came through and the assistant editor said, Dr. King's been shot. That was the first one. It stopped everything because that was amazing. And then it came over that he was dead. But I remember him being here and the impact of watching and seeing and hearing him. And
well, I have a question as a younger person that did not have the benefit of that in my life. As a reporter, I'd like to know, when he walked onto that stage, tell me what you saw. What made it different?
Well, first of all, it was a huge, I mean, it was such a large collection of humanity in there. And when he walked out, it's almost like the atmosphere electrified. It stunned him. What got me was he came out with a concern on his face, like he was walking out there, but his mind was still back behind the curtain. And then the place erupted, and the women squealed, and the men roared, and it brought him back, like, oh, and he was Dr. King. And he got up in front of the mic and He spellbound us for 20, 30 minutes. He was amazing. And the next week he was gone.
You know what I find so very troubling, and I just like your opinion on this. Imagine living a life where you're a life at a time when your life is threatened every day, knowing the imminence of your life,
yeah.
that you will not see that longevity that everyone hopes for, these grandchildren that you wish one day you will see and have an opportunity to hold, knowing that it's not even an uncertainty that you will die, and having to fight on.
Yeah, that's part of what made Selma so incredible, because that was the subtext of that.
Yeah.
That he knew that his wife and he knew they were living, you know, on borrowed time as a couple. But one of the things I would like to get to back to when he died was the March on Poverty.
Right.
Now, people don't realize, because kings become sort of a plaster saint to a lot of people. And when they think of Martin Luther King in some communities, the only thing you hear about is the content of the character. But Dr. King was very much involved and very much concerned about economic inequality, is what we call it today. And the march on Washington was for jobs and freedom, or freedom and jobs, whichever way. But somehow the jobs piece never gets mentioned. The March on Poverty, he was dead before he was able to get into it. But he saw what we now see. He saw the inequality happening, and he saw the wealth issue. And the thing that you were talking about, Professor Malone, that I thought is important, and what brings back, what it becomes centered to here, is the disparity study.
Right.
Now, the disparity study, for my audience out there, there's a study that was done by the Jersey City, the administration of Jeremiah Healey. After much poking and prodding, they did a Croson study of disparity. The study is supposed to define and document whether or not there is a disparity in the way that the city was spending its money, the taxpayers' dollars, using its purchasing power. Jersey City is a billion-dollar corporation. They spend a lot of money. The question was, how much of it is coming back to the minorities? To the minorities, and the minorities they talked about or they mentioned in the study is African-American, Hispanic-American, Asian-American, and Native American, which we don't have many of anymore, because they either put them on a reservation or did away with them about 200 years ago. And page after page of that disparity study is a condemnation from they only studied the years from 2002
right
to 2009. And every year it was unbelievable.
Was worse every year, because when they got tired of writing zero and this is true, they just left the figure out. They just, what do you do after zero?
Well,
consistently.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I had the study, and here's how incredible it will strike you. I gave it to Tina. I said, I'm sending you this. One night I said, don't try to read it all, because it's a very long, and I think it's 800 pages.
It is.
And I said, but, you know, when you get some time, take a look at it. That was on a Sunday, wasn't it?
Yes.
I called her the next day. And I said, well, did you have a chance that I read the whole thing? I said, what? She said, I told you don't do. She said, I thought I couldn't stop.
You can. Have you read the study?
No.
It's on the Urban League website.
It's on the Urban League of Hudson County has it on the website. And I read it, or I tried to write about it, but you can't capsulize it enough in the space that they give me in the Jersey.
And we host a meeting regarding it.
We hosted a meeting. We went to City Hall to talk about it. And now that finally the mayor of Jersey City, after a year of some more poking and prodding, has convened a committee to study the study, I guess. We don't know how that'll turn out. But, you know, there's an irony there. The people, the office that created the disparity.
Right.
Is the office now that's supposed to cure the disparity. This should be an interesting situation. And, you know, it would, you take a look at it and it would say, like, for instance, I'll give you a term, 2006, and it'll say contracts, subcontracts, that, you know, that were given out to the city, but that were paid for through city funds, through taxpayers' money. And it will say African-American zero, Asian-American zero, Latino-American zero, non-minority 100%. Well, how can you do that?
100%.
And it happened more than once.
And the thing about the study was everyone knew it. Did we not know it?
Oh, yeah,
we knew
it. Yeah.
You could go to any work site and you saw no one that looked like you. Wasn't it that simple? So we needed something tangible, a study. So the study, what did it do? It said what everyone knew. It made it tangible.
And it also made it, it took away the complaint usually get ascribed to minorities that you're whining.
Yeah, and it's all in your mind.
It's all in your mind.
Right.
We have to take another break. We will be back, and we'll talk some more about wealth, which is what the black communities and minority communities are lacking.
And how long have we been lacking that?
Longer than 10 years, that's for sure. Well, don't go anywhere, audience.
Wow.
You got it.
That was good.
GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network, listen to the voices in your head.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a great opportunity. If you have an event, product, service, talent, or something important to say, now is your chance. You can have your very own radio show. Whether you're just starting out or a veteran looking for a professional platform to enhance your presentation and following, the GoPro Radio Network is the premier place to cultivate and share new and exciting content. We can help you grow your audience and keep it growing long after your first broadcast. Now you have a voice. Call 212-696-8562 or visit www.goproradio.com and you'll be amazed at how easy and affordable it is to have your very own professional radio show on the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
Attention. Parents of children in Hudson County school districts, including Harrison, West New York, Jersey City, Hoboken, and Union City. You may qualify for free or low-cost child care. The Urban League of Hudson County is providing parents with the opportunity to apply if eligible for before and after school care for children 3 and 4 years old. Find out how. Come to our offices or call at 201-451-8888, extension 187. Urban League of Hudson County.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
All right, we're back. Let me ask you this, Professor. When you talk about the wealth gap in these minority communities, how do you present it and how do your students understand it?
Right. Well, one of the ways in which we do it is showing documentaries and reading stories of William Julius Wilson, one of America's most famous sociologists, documented the public policies that have prevented African Americans and other communities from building the kind of wealth you talk about, access. And one of the most basic forms of wealth for working and middle class people is the home, the house, right? So they invest in that, and they can send one home that's valued, you know, to a certain degree, can lift a whole family, can leverage kids into college, can cushion you during rough times, something to fall back upon. And then in retirement, you can take that equity, you know, and go to Florida or wherever and use that for to pay for a full home. So the access to that wealth was denied to the Black community because of, again, the banks and the redlining and the devaluing of their property. And it's not just the homes, it's the redlining happened to insurance for businesses.
Right.
And loans to improve your business or start your business. All those things are part of a whole community, the business and the residents. So all of that kind of stuff was withdrawn or not even given in the beginning. And even when some of it did come, we all know about deindustrialization, suburbanization, in which white flight was facilitated, you know, and the banks and the jobs were all subsidized to leave the inner city. And then we get left with, you know, inner cities in the 60s and 70s without resources and without the kind of resources all other communities need to thrive. And so I think the wealth differences today, it's enormous. It's huge. And if you look at the bar graphs, it's like shocking.
What I think also happened, as bad as it was, or as bad as it used to be, the last recession, depression, whichever way you want to look at it, just hurled the minority community further back. We lost so much wealth. It's, you know, we haven't even begun to get any of that leg up that we had. We're now floundering really, really at the bottom of the barrel in terms. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, do your students ever ask you about the sort of strange way we talk about class in America?
Yes.
Because we're a classless society.
Right.
So if we're a classless society, how can we have a middle class with no upper class and no lower class? They talk about middle income, and they talk about the wealthy, but they don't talk about those two in terms of class.
Right.
Only the middle class do they talk about in the terms of class. Have your students ever wondered about that? I've wondered about
it. There's kind of a mix where there are students, like as you point out, that are a lot of Americans. You know, Barbara Ehrenreich said one time, if we acknowledge there's class, then we have to acknowledge there's certain kinds of inequality in this country. If we're a classless, quote, classless, if we're all middle class, we're not unequal, you know. And they've taught Americans, I think, we've been socialized to think like, gee, you know, I have to be middle class, otherwise people will look down upon me. I'll have low status. So I'll just say middle class and make me feel better and present myself.
So class becomes a state of mind, not a state of pocketbook.
Right, exactly. And I don't want to lose a point because you made a great point earlier about the loss of wealth in the Black community in the latest recession. And as you know, the foreclosure crisis, which also entailed the predatory lending,
right,
which was, you know, targeted towards the minority community. Greenville has the highest foreclosure rate in Jersey City. And if you go around the United States, it's a huge setback, a blow against the Black community because they entice them with these awful loans and then put people further behind when they couldn't make them.
Let's speak to what happens in an entire city when you allow a community to be forsaken financially.
Right.
Because it affects an entire city, good and bad.
That's a great point you make, because when you leave so many behind, sometimes I'm telling my students actually the other day, saying like, you know, we're going to do this kids count report, but a lot of people don't care about these kids that we, you know, hopefully we care about. But maybe, as you notice with some Republicans now, maybe they care about their pocketbooks.
Maybe that's why they want to talk about less people going to jail, because they're running up state budgets.
Right. Texas got very liberal, right?
Right.
So they want to let them out now. You know what I mean? They want to be less harsh because of the money. And so we're thinking that, you know what, if we can keep those kids, you know, safe and secure and get them on their way on a positive path, we'll save you, you know. You are uncaring person. We'll save you money. Does that help?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? We'll save you money, because you're quite right. When you leave people behind, it is super costly. I mean, I have a friend who retired from you know, one of the county jails in New Jersey at 55, at $62,000 a year. I mean, the money, that's taxpayer money that we're paying to incarcerate kids. And I have mixed feelings about criminal justice programs because I'm thinking, like, why do we build a hospital at the bottom of a cliff instead of building a fence, you know, at the top before we lose our kids and our young people? Why don't we get to them so that we don't pay all these professionals who are caretakers over our so-called criminalized population?
You know, the largest union in California is the Corrections Officers Union.
Yep.
They are actually the largest union because that's how many jails they built in.
And the prison industrial complex, right, of which they are a part, and the small.
They are the criminal industrial.
Well, when you're giving tests in the third grade that are going to determine how many prisons you need to build.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. You were talking about the red line, or rather the fact that the foreclosure rate in Greenville. I saw something on my block one day. I wrote about it. Your sister was out there when it happened. Guy comes along and he gets out of a car and he's got a megaphone and he starts auctioning off a house and there's a crowd around him and he's auctioning off this house. Well, that's the place. And he says, well, hurry up, because I've got to go up. And he talked about two streets in Greenville that he had to leave here to leave that neighborhood and go. And I can remember my neighbors coming out and looking at this spectacle of somebody's house being, it brought the whole thing home. There is a price, and people's lives get affected by this. But there's always people who somehow think that if we didn't deal with that, or these people are at fault for that, and therefore we don't have to deal with that. They're just lazy. Or they're... Or like I think John Daly said, the poor are hoarding money. You know, they're just hoarding their money. You know, when by the definition of being poor, you don't have any money.
That's a better oxymoron.
I like that.
But it does sound like how we deal with this. We do the wealth thing, and you can't really do anything in a community which is so destitute. It's very difficult to bring it back. You open a store and you know, the slightest bump and you're out of business. You can't get any capital. You can't stay open. The dollar goes around the community. What one lady said it was, you know, a dollar in the black community goes around once. Maybe in an hour, it's gone. Where in other communities, it can go around 8-9 days. But here, how do your students... Are they getting this? Because it begins to be, it sound almost like routine for some people.
No, I think that, you know, it's less, like a lot of schools, we have a mix of students, and our local students who come from local, that they know, you know, obviously they've grown up. They
a lot of them have lived it. Yeah.
And we've got one of the problems and challenges I have, and I think the school has to face, is to get beyond the immediate borders, you know, and not stop hiding the city from the students and their parents, and focusing on, you know, looking mm-hmm. towards Journal Square and New York City, instead of embracing deeper into the city, going down Bergen Avenue the other way, Kennedy Boulevard, Monticello, MLK, and really, you know, trying to learn and understand and contribute. And I would, before we finish that, I would love to, like, bring up or ask and have a conversation about how do we fix this? Because one of my frustrations is, and you all know this, is the top-down development in Jersey City and everywhere, you know, in our urban centers. And now we see it go, you know, Journal Square is another example of even the councilmen there. The community didn't seem to want this development, but they got it, whether they would like it or not. And I was thinking that maybe one of the ideas is community-based development. Why? And I would love to participate in this, and I've reached out to some residences. Why doesn't the community and the residents create their own urban redevelopment plan, and they bring it to the city and not respond all the time to the city's
plan? I think this is
good. Actually, we have one. It's called Bergen Community United in Jackson Hill, Main Street. And as a matter of fact, we do have those community development issues, and we do have plans that have been brought to the table and are constantly being brought to the table. where what we do as vice chair is we sit down with our city and we talk about issues just like that. And when you talk about St. Peter's, guess what? We were one of the ones that were at the table. And some of the things that we asked for was if you're going to come into our community and ask for such a large portion of our community, then let's talk about the fact that you're asking for it and at the same time you're telling us you don't want to pay taxes on it. If you don't pay taxes on it, that means we don't profit from it. If we as citizens don't profit from it, then what do we get? Are you going to tell us that we will begin to get the proceeds in education? Is that what you're going to offer our citizens? Perhaps we can come, those of us that don't have our master's degrees, since St. Peter's College does offer a master's degree program. No, they didn't offer that. Let me tell you what they did offer. They said they wouldn't take houses by eminent domain. This is literally what happened. Second thing, you know what they said? They said, no, we can't offer even a probated funds for people to go to college. But they were going to open a movie theater. Well, what about parking? They'll still have to pay for parking. So for all intents and purposes, the community got nothing. And what it says to me is we have to have a stronger community, a community where people actually collaborate.
Right.
Now, having said that, I will say this. You have a phenomenal president that really gets it. And I'll tell you why I say that. No, I'll tell you why I say that, because I'll quote Beta State quickly. When it was time to meet with him, some things were already beyond him. They were already beyond him. These plans were already made.
When he took the chair as president.
Well, can I just jump? He's still responsible. I mean, so what? There were plans. He's the president.
Not plans. These were no longer plans.
Right. Well, then you go to these people. I went to some of those meetings. I have been at the Bergen United meeting from the beginning. I was on the housing committee, and I think there's some great work being done. They're small plans. The Greenville plan is beautiful. I've read the whole plan.
Well, Greenville plan was built from the Bergen community plan.
Right. And it depends upon tax breaks that corporations get to provide some funds, and they dictate everything around that. What I'm speaking of is the kind of development and the resources that have built the downtown should be also uptown in those kinds of ways. Now, I've met with developers, for-profit developers, smaller developers from North Bergen. They want a piece of, they will build affordable housing. But this is messy and democratic, and it will take time. And when you get politicians
battle,
in there whose eyes, right. And so we need, and I think all these plans, I love the Greenville plan. I read through it. I use it for students all the time. Great ideas. They're not being implemented. That plan's been sitting there for.
It's a plan, and that's it.
That's it. There's no resource. A
couple of things. One, the thing I've written about and talked about was how downtown Jersey City got to be the downtown it is now. And it happened because the city gave the developer who came in at first and said he didn't want any federal money or any government money. Then he changed his mind and said he needed $50 million government dollars. And our mayor got the $50 million to the developer, and he flipped the project to Lefrak and Simon. So we had Lefrak was a billionaire. Simon was another guy that was a billionaire. So we gave two billionaires $15 million in 1970 dollars, which are a lot, could buy a lot more than the $50 million could buy today. And they built this thing on our money. Now, they put a real investment in downtown. They actually spent $70 million in federal state money. Plus, they got tax abatements. I think we got to come up on a break here. So we will come back and talk about our Newport development in a few minutes. Just hang on. This is...
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
Thank you.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a great opportunity. If you have an event, product, service, talent, or something important to say, now is your chance. You can have your very own radio show. Whether you're just starting out or a veteran looking for a professional platform to enhance your presentation and following, the GoPro Radio Network is the premier place to cultivate and share new and exciting content. We can help you grow your audience and keep it growing long after your first broadcast. Now you have a voice. Call 212-696-8562 or visit www.goproradio.com and you'll be amazed at how easy and affordable it is to have your very own professional radio show on the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
Attention. Parents of children in Hudson County school districts, including Harrison, West New York, Jersey City, Hoboken, and Union City, you may qualify for free or low-cost child care. The Urban League of Hudson County is providing parents with the opportunity to apply if eligible for before and after school care for children 3 and 4 years old. Find out how. Come to our offices or call at 201-451-8888, extension 186. Urban League of Hudson County.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
With our guest tonight, Dr. Donald Malone, who is a professor of urban studies at St. Peter's, and you can't find a better laboratory to see how urban life works here, because Jersey City, being the kind of town it was, which was a working class city, is now being transformed into something completely different, little by little, inch by inch. And already the downtown area has been built up. Now houses that were full of Hispanic immigrants are now selling for $1 million a pop. I live in a neighborhood which is moving in that direction rapidly.
750,000.
Yeah. So now the question, you said, what do we do about it? And you were talking about local development. We have Bergen United. We have
Jackson Hill Main Street.
We also have the one downtown.
We have Greenville.
June Jones's program.
Morris
Canal Development. But they always, it took them 20 years to get one beautifully built housing development. The problem seems to be the developers come in, the guys with the big bucks, they offer the mayors a campaign contribution. Jerry Healy on the stage of the Lowe's Theater said in answer to a question I had about his opposition to those to abatements, that he wasn't against them anymore because he couldn't run for office if he couldn't get that money. So I always have this saying, if we want to, we should change what's on our currency from God we trust to, if you ain't got no money, you can't be my honey.
Right.
That's what it should say.
A lost opportunity, a huge opportunity for the community and the city was the medical center.
Absolutely.
The Beacon.
Absolutely.
And you wrote, I use it in my writing because I got your columns, and people stood up in the meeting, where am I going to live? And maybe three times they went back and they gave tax abatements, and there were some city council people said don't agree with it, but they still voted for the tax abatement. And then the irony is it went bankrupt, right? And then these new people came in, and it's a mess, but it's costing the city a lot of money. But there you had, we could have brought the community together, all kinds of services, and built all kinds of mixed income professionals, young professionals coming out of college, and young moms with kids and whatnot, daycare centers, all kinds of great stuff. And it's sitting there. It's an albatross. It's still got a lot of empty buildings.
Well, it's a huge complex. I don't know if George Fanopoulos will ever get it together, but interestingly enough.
But he's not in, is he?
Oh, yeah, he is.
Really? Because they sold it to him.
No. What happened was he he went around the back door and came back with the new group. There was a big meeting at City Hall, and people were really, the people that bought the condos he owned, were really angry because they bought them on his promise, which he abandoned. But you'll notice also that the Montgomery Gardens, in the Montgomery Gardens, which was a public housing site behind, is now emptying. It was in bad shape, but I knew that the...
You wrote that.
It was gone. You couldn't...
You wrote that.
Yeah, it was gone. We are now...
We're at the 1 minute mark.
We're at the 1 minute mark.
And we want to ask Dr. Malone, please summarize your thoughts and let us know you'll be back.
Right. No, I just want to say I thank you for inviting me, and this is so exciting to meet with folks who care about Jersey City and know Jersey City and love Jersey City and have done so much for the city. If we had more people active, I think this city would be much more equal in terms of the opportunities for all its residents.
Promise us you'll come back?
I would love to come back.
All right. We're out. We're just about done for the night. We will see you next Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Grew up listening to a lot of jazz.